for Kentuckidery. The Maine outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. And tomorrow morning, I think it'll be about a half hour before sunrise, it's the beginning of the Maine moose season. What about that, huh?
What about that?
I had a moose grunt, and it's not working. Oh, I know what happened. Oh. Oh, that is... Anyway, the Maine moose season, that's what you're going to hear tomorrow morning if you're a moose hunter and you're lucky. And we're going to, later on the program, we're going to have a short conversation with Lee Cantor, who's the moose biologist, and he's going to fill us in and tell us just what the outlook is for the Maine moose season. And the first season starts tomorrow, lasts a week, and then there are two others beyond that. So we'll be talking to Lee a little later in the show. Anyway, welcome to our program. Nice to have you with us tonight. And again, if you'd like to be on our program, we have a statewide toll-free number, which is
1-800-966-1039. And dial the whole number, even if you're local. 1-800-966-1039.
Yeah. And Norm, what happened to the big banner that had all the station ID numbers on it.
I don't have a clue, but I got some written over here.
Oh, well, I think I can do it by heart. Let's see if I can do it by heart. You're
all
listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 103.9, 101.3, and 95.1 in Rockland.
Bingo.
Did I do it?
You FM.
Did it
right.
All right.
FM.
Okay, and you said I was an old so-and-so. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to be talking to some special guests in just a moment, but first, the crew who make this possible every week. The man just back from a bear hunt, Mr. Norm Plord. Take a bow, Norm.
Good evening. And, it's been good to be back.
Good to be back,
good
huh?
Good to be back. Yeah, I missed the show last week. So.
No bears, huh?
No, it was really – I mean, everything was getting hit, but
– Yeah, but you had a good time.
Had a good time.
And you ate well?
Ate very well.
So had some of that special chili that you make?
I didn't make anything.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, that's too bad. And our esteemed co-host is a registered master Maine guide. He's an author of a number of great books on fishing, my friend Robert Lehman.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure being here. We'll have a big report a little later.
All right. We look forward to that.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce our guest at this time. He's the honcho, the top hand up at Maple Lane Farms in Charleston, which do a great job processing wild meat as well as domestic meat. And Barry Higgins, welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here, sir. And we'll be talking to Barry, and he's going to tell you all about how to age that deer meat or that moose meat or the bear meat, whatever kind of wild meat you have. Barry's been at it for many years, and he knows a thing or two about that. And with him is his daughter-in-law, who's the marketing director for Maple Lane Farms up there in Charleston. Randa, welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And we'll be talking to these folks, and you can put questions to them if you'd like to at our number 1-800-966-1039. Right now, time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwoods Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. And I want to remind you, if you're an outdoorsman or an outdoor woman and you're interested in making a little extra money, our sales manager is looking for folks who might want a part-time job selling advertising for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. If you're interested, we'll train you and we'll give you a generous commission. You can call our sales manager during the week. Call Vic at 732-4880. 732-4880. And Bob, here's a chance to make a little extra bucks.
He was. You mean I have to get off the couch?
You might have to get off the couch. Yeah, you
Alice
might.
Wants me to get off the couch.
Oh,
I'm watching too much TV.
Too many ball games, yeah.
Yeah, right.
A couple of things here. VZ Salmon Club asked me to tell you that they're having a business meeting this Thursday night, the 27th, and they have a special night there. This is open to the public as well as the VZ Club members. A gourmet Italian dinner. How about that, Bob?
Sounds wonderful.
And it's provided by Jimmy Well, I'm going to have trouble with this one. Matsurazo, I think I have that right. Irishman, Jimmy Matsurazo. And it's $5 for admission for the gourmet Italian dinner. And then after that, from 6 to 7, they're going to have a business meeting and a raffle. And then at 7 to 8, they're going to have an update on the fish passage for the Penobscot River by Mitch Simpson, who's with the Department of Marine Resources. A busy evening at the VZ Salmon Club. The action all starts at 5 p.m. this Thursday night, September 27th. Also, I want to just make a quick announcement. The state, Bob, has just adopted a new tagging system. I think there was an article in the local paper, the BDN, about that. But anyway, they've adopted a new electronic tagging system. Remember the old days? You went and you tagged your deer.
Right.
And the gal there at the store, she'd write it on a card and then stick it in a shoebox.
Right.
And then it would be stuck in the shoebox for 6 months. And finally, the department would get them. And right. a year later, you'd find out how many deer were harvested.
Oh, yeah,
well,
right.
now it's automated.
Wow.
So it comes automatically.
I suppose it's about time.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, although I always like things in shoeboxes, but now it's electronic.
Right? I liked it when you just put the tag on the E and that was it.
Yeah. Anyway, the wildlife manager for IFNW, Judy Camuso, is going to be with us by telephone in a couple of weeks to explain all of this to you and how that works. And let's see. Again, at 7:30, we're going to talk to Lee Cantor, the moose biologist, for just a couple minutes about the Maine moose hunt. Right now, I think it's time for Bob's favorite music. And Bob is here tonight.
I'm the big boss, Bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
These are my reeds.
Yeah.
Too bad Jimmy wasn't here to do that with me.
Jimmy?
Jimmy. Who?
What? What was that?
Would you take the collar off that moose and get him over to the other studio?
Get him on the other studio, okay. Norm, get this moose out of here, would you?
Get this moose out of here. Will you know?
Okay. What's going on in the fishing world?
The fishing world, Paul, is something else. The last couple nights, tonight and tomorrow night, we're going to have a freeze. A freeze. I know last night we had 34 degrees at my house.
Wow.
And that's cold, brother.
Yeah,
I had to take a really heavy jacket to walk the dog.
A frost tonight, huh?
Well, and a freeze up north. Hard freeze. I'm going to have to take my tomatoes in, I guess.
Yeah, I think you better.
Yeah. So anyway, that's going to get the fish kind of lively, I would say. Cold water fish.
Yeah.
And I'd say finally, because it's been so warm. I mean, the lakes should be cooling down finally. I mean, it's so late in the season. Generally, by now, they're out there trolling, catching some nice salmon. But after these two cold nights, I would say the water would probably be somewhere around 55 or 60.
Yeah.
And that'll start getting the trout and salmon going, as you know. And these fish would be preparing to get on the spawning beds.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what they call a game fish spawning bed?
It's called a red?
That's absolutely correct, sir. Huh? Give that guy a silver dollar.
Who said the show's not educational?
I know
right?
it. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what kind of, water flow they like for reds? What kind of bottom do they like? What are they looking for? You know that.
Oh, gravelly?
Gravelly, yeah.
Sandy, gravelly?
Riffles.
Yeah.
Riffles for the water and a gravel bottom.
All right.
And if you haven't got that, you don't get really good spawning activity. Yeah. You just don't. And most fish look for, you know, rivers, like landlocked salmon and some trout. And the trout, of course, you get a lot of these beaver dams in these trout, you know, and they just can't spawn. They can't get out of there.
Yeah.
And they need the riffles to spawn, so
All right. They
don't reproduce. So anyway, and the trout are beautiful this time of year, as you know.
Oh, they are. Gorgeous.
A male trout right now is something else.
You bet.
Yeah, and it's time for trolling again, as I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
And get out your streamer flies and get out there, because I'm telling you, this is the time, son. The water's ready. They'll be coming up. They'll be feeding again before they start spawning. So this is it.
Okay.
That's why I'm going next week.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And I'm not allowed to tell folks where you're going. I bet they can guess. I bet they can guess. It's going to be south of here, southeast, down east.
Well, I like to fish rivers. I think I'd fish them somewhere different this year.
You're going up the Big Eddy, right? West Branch?
I'm thinking about it. I've been thinking about that and a couple other
sure
places,
you are.
So I'm not quite sure.
Right.
Alice is going with me, so
okay.
Do the cooking.
All right. Hey, that wraps up Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. And again, our guests, if you joined us late, Barry Higgins, who's the owner-operator of Maple Lane Farms up there in Charleston. And with him is his daughter-in-law, Randa, who's the marketing lady for Maple Lane Farms. We'll be talking to them in just a minute. Right now, Randa has an outdoor trivia question she's going to lay on you. And if you can answer this question, I'm going to make sure you get a copy of my Maine Angler's Logbook. And we'll mail it directly to you. Do you have the question, Randa?
I do. What are the legal requirements for erecting a hunting tree stand on private property?
Okay, one more time, please.
What are the legal requirements for erecting a hunting tree stand on private property?
And the number is?
1-800-966-1039.
And we'll be right back. Okay, we have some callers standing by, and Randa is waiting for you to tell her what are the legal requirements for erecting a hunting tree stand on private property. Good evening. Welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Hi. I think it's... You got to ask permission, and you got to put your name and your phone number on it.
Okay. Randa, is that the right answer?
It looks good to me.
Looks good to you?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. That's correct.
Yeah, Randa thinks you're pretty close. You also have to have either verbal or written permission. Okay? Congratulations. Okay. You are a winner.
Thank you.
And I'm going to have my wife send you a copy of my new book, The Maine Angler's Logbook, okay?
Thank you.
You are a fisherman, right?
Well, I don't fish too much anymore.
You don't fish? Well, gee whiz.
You must be a hunter.
Yeah.
Would you rather have a deer hunter's logbook?
Yeah, that would be fine.
All right.
I go out hunting.
Okay, I'll send you a copy of Deer Hunter's Logbook instead, all right?
Thank you very much.
Okay, if you'll stay on the line, Norm Plord, the chili maker, will get your mailing address.
All right.
And
have a good night. Bye.
All right, you too. What's your first name?
Rick.
Where are you calling us from, Rich?
Millinocket.
Millinocket. Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. And you have a good week. And make sure you get the book, okay?
Thank you, sir. Yep.
Thank you, Rick. Yep. Bye-bye. Stay in the line now. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, that's the correct answer, Bob. You have to get verbal or written permission, either one.
To the landowner. From the landowner.
The landowner, yeah.
Absolutely.
And you got to have a little 2-inch by 4-inch tag that has your name and address on it.
Right.
And your phone number.
You better have it.
That's right. Otherwise, you'd get in trouble with the warden, right?
Oh, you sure will.
Yeah. You used to be a warden. Did you write anybody up for that?
I did for... 1 year, I guess, around that,
Probably back then you didn't have to do that, I don't think.
I don't know. We had a lot of laws to learn back in those days when I worked as a deputy.
I don't think they had tree stands back then, did they?
Oh, they had everything back then.
Tree stands, yeah.
Well, you know, the diehards, you know, the old veterans.
Yeah.
They had hide them on you, in other words, you wouldn't know where they are. It was fun, though, to night hunting was our biggest thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's a whole list of stuff that I could go on about what we our duties were, and they are numerous.
Yeah,
rather
they are.
Than getting just unlawful deer hunters.
You bet.
Yep.
Okay. I'd like to, again, welcome our guest, Barry Higgins, and his daughter-in-law, Randa. And we're going to talk about processing meat, both wild meat and also domestic meat. And Barry Higgins runs a great operation up there. I've patronized him a number of times, called Maple Lane Farms in Charleston. Are you actually in Charleston or Hudson?
We are actually in Charleston.
In Charleston,
yes.
Right?
We're 1 mile from the center of the village.
Oh, okay.
East of Charleston Village.
Barry, let's start out. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the technical side of aging meat and everything. But how about, for our listeners who may not know either of you, how about telling them a little bit about your business and how you happened to wind up doing this sort of thing?
Well, actually, we was dairy farmers back in the 70s, and the price of beef dropped into the crapper.
Yeah.
And we actually had a meat cutter that was milking cows for us.
Yeah.
And so we set up a cooler in my dad's cellar, and we was also selling milk out the door.
Yeah.
And we started by selling meat on the honor system. And that's how we got started in the early 70s.
In the early 70s.
Yeah.
So you were, as a young man, were a dairy farmer?
Yeah. I was actually the third generation. My grandfather bought the place in Depression. My father bought it from him, and I took over in 99, actually. I farmed my dad until 99.
Yeah. Yeah. And we found out, talking during the break, that you're actually related to Bob Lehman's wife.
Absolutely, yes.
Right.
Alice,
my wife. We're relatives here.
Used to be Alice.
I'm rather distant, but I am around.
Used to be Alice Higgins, but...
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, you, what we call them Higginses.
Yeah. Yeah.
What they call you out there in Charleston?
I always said, not so much now, but in years past when they had the big families, there used to be more Higginses in Charleston than was people.
There was 14, I think, in Alice's family.
Yeah. Wow.
They had big families in those days.
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
So you kind of transferred from a dairy farmer to a meat processor out of necessity?
Yes. We're still in the dairy business, and we're farming bigger now than we did then.
You still sell milk?
We still sell milk, Oker's Dairy, and that's the only product that we have there that doesn't go directly to the consumer, that goes, through commercial.
Yeah. All right. And so you've been at this meat processing business for many, many years, and Maple Lane Farms is, I know it's well known among folks who like to bring wild meat somewhere to get it processed. And I think I was reading in the bio that Mary prepared before the program that you have, I couldn't believe this, Bob, how many, is something like 5,000 moose you've processed in the last 30 years?
Yeah, quite a few years, we've done over 200.
A year?
A year. We'll do, this year we'll probably, we've had to cut back because we're so busy with the meat and the slaughtering business, but... We've got 80 reservations for this hunt, Saturday, Monday. We got 80 for the second hunt, but we only took, 18 reservations for the final hunt.
Yeah.
And we also have been, the Indians have been our friends for years, and they come every year, so they don't have to reserve, but we get 15, 20 Indian moose.
Their hunting season is before the conventional season, right?
Well, it starts, I think, September 15th and goes through November 30th, I think.
Okay. Over the years now, we started, the moose hunt started back in, when was it? You remember back in the...
I can't tell you.
It must have been like the early 70s, wasn't it?
Sometime in the 70s. I think maybe mid-70s.
I think it was. Over the years, so that's been like, 48 years you've been at this?
Something like that.
Over the 48 years, have you noticed any differences in either the hunters or the qualities of the animals or the size of the animals? Anything come to mind?
Well, I think the state has really done a good job... educating the hunters. The quality of the animal that comes in is probably better than it was in the early days.
No kidding.
I think most people try to get that moose down. They try to get it cleaned and get the ice in it
No hormones.
No hormones. No. But there's no hormones in Maple Lane beef either. So.
All right. So you have noticed they seem to be a little more well-prepared to take care of the meat properly.
Yeah, they are. They're doing a pretty good job. We do have the occasional one. Sometimes not their fault that they have a hard time getting it out, and it's a hot day. But I'll give you one thing. If you happen to be a moose hunter that's listening, if you get a good-sized bull moose with a big hump on it, even if you're going to mount that head, you need to get that hump, split it down the back, right up to the to the base of the head, and open that hide up. That's very thick hide, and let that heat out of there.
Fast, right?
And generally, if we have spoilage in a moose, it's usually up in the front end.
Oh, is that right?
Well,
yeah.
Did you ever notice a moose that's got a small butt on it and very big shoulders?
Yeah.
The front end is the hardest part to cool.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's that hide is so heavy, and I've had some experience with elk hunting. It's the same thing. The hide is so thick it's tough for the meat to cool down because that heat is retained in there, right?
Yes. Yeah, you take a 800 or 1,000-pound or 900-pound moose, gosh, it from the inside of that cavity to the back of that hump might be a foot or a foot and a half, and you can't cool it from the cavity no matter how much ice you put on it. You've got to open it up and let the heat out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I've not seen that done that often. The three moose I was involved with, we did have, you know, frozen bottles of milk. Of water. And we drank the milk.
Actually, milk is cheaper than water now, so probably milk would be cheaper for you.
It is, yeah. You can say that again. Yeah, it's amazing how much we pay for water these days. Yeah. But we do digress. Okay, so anyway, that's interesting, Barry, that you're recommending then. Yeah. Why wouldn't that be applicable to any moose? Are you like a cow moose or any other moose?
Absolutely. But the cow moose generally have a smaller neck. When you get into that hump is when you get into problems.
Yeah.
And so most of our hunters, and we'll tell them that when they get a reservation, that, you know, if they want to know what to do, that's the number one thing that I like to see happen. Sure. Not so much the hindquarters. You can open up those hindquarters.
Yeah.
When we have problems with a hindquarter is generally if they've, like, it's cold at night and they put them in the back of the pickup and they leave the hind legs together.
Yeah.
Sometimes that you'll get some heating there. And that's the worst enemy of meat is heat. You got to get that heat out of there.
Got to get that cool down.
I give you a little story about a bear we took in last week, and it weighed 440 pounds, and they got it with dogs, and they'd had some trouble. They killed one of the dogs, got killed, and they had three of them injured, and so they didn't get it gutted. Brought it into us that afternoon, and by the time it got there, the bear was spoiled. They saved the hide, but the meat was no good.
Oh, that's too bad.
But it's heat that causes it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So we're going to talk at 7:30. We're going to take a short break and talk to Lee Cantor, the moose biologist, just get an outlook on the moose for the year. Randall, you've been quiet there. You're the marketing lady for Maple Lane Farms. And so what's your job?
I do a lot of the Facebook for the farm because I know it's, doesn't cost a lot of money.
That's right.
You can get a whole lot of followers.
Yeah.
And a lot of interaction, actually. Yeah. They get a lot of interaction on there, and we run the specials and anything we want to tell anybody.
Yeah.
Educate people.
And we're going to talk a little bit after the break about the fact that not only do you handle wild meat at Maple Lane Farms, but you also, your main business is domestic pork and beef. And we're going to be talking about that in just a couple of minutes.
You know, Paul, that actually, if you look at this now, you are a distant relative to the Higginses, because Alice's daughter and your son are married, Scotty.
Right.
So that makes you a distant relative, you see.
Are you
You're
sure
tied into the Higginses.
I am? Well, I'll be doggone. Well, next time I got to get a price break on my wild meat, right?
Do I call you Grampy or do you call me Grampy?
Okay. We'll be back.
More Maine Outdoors next.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we're talking to Barry Higgins from Maple Lane Farms and his daughter-in-law, Randa. Right now, I think we have a phone hookup with the moose biologist, Lee Cantor. Are you there, Lee?
I am.
Hi, how are you tonight?
How are you, Paul?
Did the Patriots win?
No.
They don't play. They haven't played. They play at 8.
Oh, I thought they'd play today. No, okay.
They got a kickoff,
Oh, all right.
Oh, got a kickoff, huh?
Yeah. Okay, well, we won't keep you too long, Lee, but I just wanted to, we know that the moose season opens officially tomorrow morning, a half hour before sunrise, right?
That's right.
And I just thought maybe you could just tell us a little bit, what's the prospect? What's the outlook for the moose seasons?
Good as always, you know, a lot of it's up to the weather and the hunters.
Yeah, and we're going to have a little better weather than we did opening day last year, right?
Oh, geez, last year was horrible.
Yeah, I was out
in
that.
I'm glad Barry's on there telling a little bit about, you know, caring for the meat, because last year was not pretty at all.
Yeah.
And we're trying to emphasize more and more with hunters that cutting up that moose in the woods is the right thing to do. It's legal. We've made all kinds of provisions for that. And if it's going to get warm out, that's the only way to go.
Yeah. It's funny. I've noticed, you know, we talked about this before, I think, but there seems to be an unwillingness on the part of Maine moose hunters to cut their animal up. Like, I guess they want to save it for photo ops or something, but out west, that's the way to go. I mean, you quarter it up, and that way you can cool it down fast, right?
Well, it's hard to get out of history. In our history, the hunt started in 1980. I know you guys are debating that one, but 1980 was the first year of the modern hunt, and back then the department required people to bring a whole moose out.
Yeah.
And I think it's been hard to live that one down.
Oh, okay.
You know, certainly people want to weigh their moose and all that, but there's no requirement. Absolutely perfect to cut that moose up. And we just made a video, a professional video, Dave Hintosh of Smoldering Lake Outfitters and myself with a professional videographer of how to disassemble, quarter up a moose, how to do a gutless method that we're hoping we'll have on our website next year. A little too late for this year, but we got a professional video coming down the line. And last week we did a demo up at Old Town Trading Post, quartering up some deer to demonstrate that as well. And we're going to try to do more of that.
Yeah, they out west they call it the dry dressing method, which I've used on a couple of elk, and it's a great way to go. It's not as messy, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, if you were moose hunting, would you automatically quarter it up, Lee, or would it depend on the situation?
I've done one moose hunt, and I had no interest in doing anything, but
yeah.
I did a gutless method in 2014. I was a mile off the road when I saw my moose, and I guarantee you, when you think of hunting, another word that comes to my mind is freedom, and there's nothing that gives you freedom more than being able to set off in the woods and not have to worry about all the stuff you need to twitch a moose out. If you're going to cut it up, you just need a couple of, fair to middling strong backs.
Right.
You can part them out as many pieces as you want, and you can get in the woods and get away from everybody else and go to your moose hunt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it can really make for a much more pleasurable hunt, I would think, right?
Well, what's better than preserving a meat quality?
You bet.
Right?
Yeah. Well, that's great. So are you going to be at the tagging stations this week?
Yeah, I'll be up north tomorrow.
Heading up north. But you'll be at a tagging station up there probably, huh?
Oh, yeah. Every year.
Yeah.
I work just about every moose season out there and check moose and talk to hunters and
You gather a certain amount of scientific data from checking these animals, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got, every year we collect about 90% of the moose that are shot every year. We have information on their age, their specific age. I doubt you could find another state that can match that. So we know whether it's the bulls or the cows, we know the age of just about every one of those animals. The age distribution just tells us all kinds of important biological things. Of course, tomorrow we'll be measuring spread of all the bulls, and typical for a lot of these check stations, we'll weigh quite a few of them as well.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I appreciate you being with us tonight, and we hope you get a chance to see the ball game.
Okay.
All right. All right. Have a good week, Lee, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Good luck to everyone out there.
All right. Thank you, sir. Yep. Bye-bye. Yep. All right. That was Lee Cantor, the Maine moose research biologist. Do you get many moose hunters bring in a quartered up animal?
I'm guessing maybe 5%, something like that.
5%,
Most of them bring in the whole carcass.
Yeah.
And one thing I'd like to stress, if you're going to quarter them up in the woods, well, number one, you're probably going to leave some of it behind if you quarter them, because it's just not, especially you get into a thing like, if you get a big bull and he's got a neck that weighs 200 pounds on it, you're not going to lug that out of the woods.
Yeah.
The number one problem we have with people doing their quarters in the woods is cleanliness. A lot of times we get them there, we have to skin them all over again because they get so much gravel and needles and all that stuff. But
what we do with elk is we have a game bag.
Yeah.
Those cheesecloth game bags, we wrap their hind quarters in that and the fore
and
quarters.
And when they do it that way, generally it's pretty good.
Pretty clean, right?
Yeah.
That way,
yeah.
But, well, how do they get it out of the woods if they're way, way, way back in when No vehicle could get in there or anything else. Wouldn't they have to quarter it up to get it out?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean...
you don't have any choice sometimes.
You don't have any choice, yeah. And then it's a lot of work, and you got to lug it on your back with a pack frame. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Well, I would say.
I think that the people that, if they get them next to the road, you know, which a lot of them are pickup hunters, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if they can get them on that pickup and get them tagging station, get them in there, I wouldn't advise them to mess around with quartering them up because I think you can keep the quality better.
Yeah, yeah.
But
okay.
When you can't always do that. If you shoot one and he runs into bog, 1,000 yards, you're in trouble.
Yeah. But it's certainly a good alternative if your animal is too far back in the woods to get out.
And I'm not saying they all come dirty. There's some people that do a very good job.
Yeah.
And some people don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, out west, that's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Nobody else does it any other way.
Yeah.
They're all quartered up. Yeah. Before we take our, is it time for our commercial break yet? I guess it is, isn't it?
In about 5 minutes.
Okay.
4 minutes. Yeah.
4 minutes. Okay. Before we release Bob here to take off on this commercial, I want to ask you, would you describe for our listeners the process? Bob shoots a moose and brings it into you. What happens? Describe for us, would you, Barry, exactly what happens?
Well, when they get to our place, we've got a hydraulic crane out behind the slaughter facility, and we'll unload that moose out of your pickup or your trailer, whatever you've got it on, and we'll drop it into a cradle, and I get two or three guys will get on that thing, and it'll be gone within 10 or 15 minutes. And we actually pull the hide off after we get it down, and then we slide it into onto what we call the kill floor, but it's an overhead door that goes right on where we actually do the beef and pork slaughter, and they split it, and we try to get in the cooler, as quick as possible. They go in; it goes into a 32 to a 36 degree cooler. Before it goes in, it's completely washed, and then we do an acidic rinse.
Now, what is that?
Actually vinegar and water, and it'll kill the E. coli on the outside of the carcass, and it'll stop the bacteria from growing.
Oh, that's great!
And we're required to do that on all of our domestic animals.
Oh, you
so
are.
We do it with the others, and we hope to when it slides into the cooler there, we hope to have 99.9% of the hair and the dirt or whatever they've got on them. And the other thing that I really like, if they come in with a hide on them, is the biggest thing is we can keep that thing clean. And that's the biggest problem we have is any wild game coming in dirty.
Okay.
Otherwise, and if it's been heated, that's the number one killer on the meat itself.
Okay. So the critter goes into your cooler. And the temperature has to be between 32 and 36 for the proper aging. And when I grew up, there seemed to be a debate among deer hunters about whether it pays to age meat. But that's a given now, isn't it? I mean, you need to age meat to make it right, don't you?
But on moose meat and deer meat, it doesn't age like beef does because we take a real lean cow or bull doesn't have that outside fat on it,
right?
They won't hang the way a beef will that's got a coat of half inch or an inch of fat on the outside. You can age them almost forever, and but you take one with red meat, which moose doesn't have very little fat on it. So if you age them even in our conditions there, we keep our aging coolers at 36 degrees. That's where it stays. Doesn't go up or down. But if you age them more than a week, they tend to turn black on the outside, and the cutters will end up
wasting some meat.
Wasting. They'll have to trim it.
Okay.
Now I think if you're aging your moose or your deer at home and it's cold weather, leave the hide on it, and you can age it better. But in my conditions, I can't put anything in my cooler with hair on it.
Okay, this is a curve for me. I'm an avid deer hunter. I've never heard this.
Yeah.
I've heard it, but I didn't really buy it.
Yeah.
But you're telling me now that it pays. Have you heard this, Norm? Have you heard about this? You're saying that it pays me to leave the hide on?
I'm telling you that once you take that hide off, even under perfect conditions, 36 degrees, day and night, that meat will deteriorate more when you take the hide off.
Now, it will.
You remember the old guys that used to hang them up in the shed?
And they'd go out and carve off a piece all winter?
Yeah. No, I mean, that doesn't work if you skin it off. It is if it's freezing and thawing, as they had in the shed, but it will you'll end up trimming it. Back when we done a lot of deer, sometimes I couldn't get to them quick enough. They'd hang there for a week, and along the flank, the thin meat, sometimes you'd end up not being able to use that because it would start to deteriorate.
All right. So if two questions. If you're going to hang a deer, let's say it's November and the temperature at night is down to 30, 25, and day it goes up to 40.
Right.
Is that okay for a couple of days?
That's okay because that hide will insulate it so that doesn't warm up during the day. Okay. Once you get it cooled down, that hide will tend to keep it cool.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. But just for the sake of, being able to use all the meat, once it goes in that cooler, it's not going to last for more than 6 or 8, 10 days, and then you're going to be trimming it.
Yeah.
So I think the quality may get better, but you're going to lose some of the meat. Yeah.
So as far as your moose and your deer, at your plant, how long do you age it?
Well, part of my answer is going to be economics. I have to, if I take in 60 moose next week, I've got to get those moose out of there and get back onto the domestic.
Right.
So I can't hang them for 2 weeks because I'll be out of business. Oh,
okay.
See what I'm saying?
Okay.
But about a week is about all. But it's about all we like to hang them, and because of the reason I just told you, we're going to do a lot of extra trimming.
Okay.
Yeah.
I brought a moose into you with my buddy who shot it last year, Greg Goodman, and I'm just curious, how long did our critter age? What's your guess?
I'm guessing probably 5-6 days.
Yeah, because you did a fantastic job. That I'm still eating it; it's delicious.
Keep talking. I like the sound of it.
it's really good. Okay, if you have a question for either Barry or his daughter-in-law, Randa, we welcome your calls at 1-800-966-1039, and you can ask them any questions you want to ask about aging wild meat or anything. Right now, though, we're going to make a dollar here. Bob Lehman is chomping at the bit to tell you about General Appliance in Brewer.
And how could you not go into General Appliance in Brewer for all of your non-electric appliance needs? And they all, but they're not all non-electric. They do have electric appliance as well. But they have gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, and top of the line, compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
You know that. I'm sorry. Jim isn't here to say that. But anyway.
Norm waited all week to be able to say that one line. You did it. Just a great job.
Thank you. I practiced, too.
Right, okay. So General Appliance is located right handy here in Brewer, easy to get to.
Yep.
Just cross the old Bangor Brewer Bridge, take a right and a left. You're on Center Street. They got practically the whole block there on the right. Can't miss them. And Al Elkin is a wonderful guy to talk to. And they have great repairmen in there, too, if you have a problem with an appliance that you didn't necessarily buy at General Appliance in Brewer.
You bet.
And you give them a call in there, and they'll send Magic Andy there. He'll come over and take care of it, like he did for me not too long ago.
Yeah, he did.
A fantastic job. And the number to call over there if you're looking for some repairs on an appliance is
989-3714.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you.
You've got a good memory, haven't you?
Oh. Oh, yeah.
You know one thing, Paul, about compost toilets? The biggest thing is because no mosquitoes, you know that.
No mosquitoes.
That's fantastic.
Yep, yep.
And you ever used one?
They're fantastic.
I have.
I've never used one.
I have, and they are fantastic.
Yeah. No odor.
Okay, there's no, well,
there's no septic.
There's no running water.
No running water.
No plumbing.
No plumbing.
Yeah, and no problems. Well, no environmental problems.
Yep.
And
you can put them right in the closet at your camp. You don't have to go way out back.
That's
20, 30
that's
yards.
That's generally, they tell me over there, where most of them go is right in the closet. Those, they're portable.
Yeah.
You know, you just put them in there, and they're great. No odor. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
So, and another thing about General Appliance and Brewer is the biggest thing.
They have our books over there.
You know it, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, you can pick up our books over there. They have a better library there than the Bangor Public Library.
Well, I guess they do. They got a big display of our books
over there.
Yeah, they
do. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
General Appliance and Brewer, we urge you to patronize them as we do. And we have callers standing by with questions for either Barry or Rhonda. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've got my moose call here. You want to hear a moose grunt?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Doggone thing. Oh, there it is. Oh. You hear that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, since you're talking to my father and my sister-in-law, I wanted to mention how good their sausage is.
Hmm. Yeah.
Their moose, bear, anything.
We have personally experienced the sausage and the moose burger and the moose backstrap, and it's incomparable. I agree.
I need to put one more plug out there.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, my son owns Foggy Mountain Guide Service.
Oh, we heard about that. Yeah. I'm going to come up and try to sell him an ad here this week.
Well, there you go. But I just wanted them to make sure they mention their sausage because people love it.
Yeah. How's your bear hunt?
I never get a chance to go. He's too busy with everybody now.
Oh, but how's he doing? Do you know the bears are hitting the baits and everything?
Excellent. Excellent.
Oh.
Excellent.
Oh, great.
This sounds like a family program to me.
Yes. All right.
We had to do this.
Yeah. No,
Have a great evening.
We appreciate your call. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right. We have another caller stacked up, don't we?
Yes, you do.
Norm? Go ahead, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Barry Higgins.
Hey, Paul. This is Tony. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, great show. I just wanted to throw in on what Mr. Higgins said that I've been hanging deer for, I don't know, 30 years plus. And when I hang them outside with the skin on. And the only meat I have to trim is, you know, is what's been exposed on the inside. And then the shot meat as usual. So I completely concur. That's what I've always done.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that. And I've never had any bad luck with it.
You got to watch it. You got to watch the temperatures though, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But all things being equal, as long as it cools off good, typically, and this, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm really interested in this, because it's contrary to what I've always thought. What temperature, if you hang your deer and then you look at the weather forecast for 4 or 5 days, what temperature, daytime temperature, would make you nervous?
When, you know, if you have more than a day or two where it's getting in the upper 60s, that starts to make me nervous, and I would take it down. But usually I'm hanging a deer sometime in the second half of deer season,
yeah.
So it's usually not a problem.
Yeah, so 40 or 50 degrees is fine, right?
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then if you're getting and it even freezes and thaws some, I mean, it ain't a perfect process,
yeah,
but,
yeah,
no means.
So Barry, that's not a problem if it freezes and thaws a little?
I don't think so. Do you hang it indoors or outdoors?
No, it's in an apple tree. It's I mean, it's not ideal, but I'm just saying I've never had anything horrible happen.
I have had some come in that have hung and they've froze up and they have no way to thaw them, so they'll bring them in and we'll thaw them and overnight and then skin them, put them in the cooler.
Yeah.
And I've had some problem with them filling up with water.
Have you?
Yes. And, you want to make sure that the esophagus is open. So if it get rain, it runs down through and runs out the nose.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's one thing. And I think if you can hang them in a shed or a building that doesn't get direct sunlight, it probably works a little better. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir. That's ideal if you have that option. I just don't always have it.
Yeah.
And I hang them head up, so then they drain fine.
There you go. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I wanted to say this real quick, is that I've had some sheep processed through the Higgins Enterprise there and done a great job. Thank you very much. And hope you keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
You too, Paul.
All right. Thank you for the call. Good comments. We appreciate it. Yeah. Randa, I'm going to get you to talk again here. One of the things we haven't touched on, we talk mostly about processing wild meat, but let's make sure before the clock runs out here, tell our listeners about what you have available there as far as domestic meat and pork. How does that work? Somebody wants to come by, can they shop at your place?
Absolutely. Get lots of people who do it. They can buy as little or as much as they want. Some people come in, I don't know, every week, shop for the week. Some people stop on the way to camp. Some people...
You have a display case with meat there?
Yep, we do.
Yeah.
Pork and beef, both.
And your prices are competitive with the so-called big box store?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Most people are surprised at the prices.
And now, you mentioned no hormones in this beef. This is all natural, organic.
No hormones, no antibiotics. Yep. And the other thing is we've got kind of a secret there. We're getting 3 to 4 pound a day gain on a beef. And I had a lady, actually a bear hunter, that come to us, had it processed from Massachusetts. She called me today, and they bought some beef and some pork while they was there. She wanted to know if we shipped, and I said, no, I can't ship over state lines because I'm state inspected.
Right.
But I told her I didn't, but she said, That's the best meat we've ever eaten in our life, and we just want to know if you'd ship it. And I said, you'll have to come back up here and buy it, and you can carry it over state lines, but I can't.
Yeah.
But we really do. I'd put our quality against anybody, anywhere, any store, anywhere, and I believe that we can beat them. I tell my customers, first-time customers, that probably they're going to get addicted, and usually they do. Yeah.
So if I want to stop by your store, I could buy like a pork loin?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you guarantee it.
I guarantee everything 100%. If you have a problem,
could you tell us, Barry, what is the most popular piece of meat that you like from a moose?
I got to be truthful with you. I haven't had a piece of moose meat myself for probably, I think back when we was in the old building back, probably in the late 90s.
Somebody else's meat. So,
it's somebody else's meat. And we actually... God strike me dead if I'm lying to you. We don't take anybody's meat. We don't. You end up with all your tenderloin.
I was going to say a hat. Moose hat. Is
well, if I'd known that, I would have brought you a piece of backstrap. I can't believe this.
You know, my father, when he was around, he used to like moose meat, and if he knew somebody, well, he'd get a piece of moose meat. And I like moose meat, don't get me wrong, but I can eat anything I want, anytime I want, and it's... And my wife isn't completely happy with game. She'd rather have domestic.
Oh, that right? Yeah.
We had a third caller, and he said that you support the vets. Is that correct?
Yeah, we had we had a piece on one of the television stations here a while ago that we support the vets very heavily. We think they've had a bad rap for a few years and. The vets, the police, and the firefighters, we love them all.
All right, great. Hey, we're out of time, folks. We appreciate you being here. It's been a great show.
Thank you.
And best of luck to you, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest next week is, our host next week is going to be Greg Burr. Bob and I are taking a little break, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
That's right.
Right here on
Maine Outdoors.